Good afternoon and welcome to Modernising Actuarial Practice to Address Climate Change and Societal Issues, a systemic literature review. Quite a comprehensive topic, so I'm very much looking forward to the discussion. I'm Scott, I'm a principal at Taylor Fry. And before we kick off, I just thought I might reflect on yesterday's discussion, which was around, you know, earning or re-earning each year the license to operate. And we talked about that in the context of financial services organizations. But I think the same is true of actuaries. You know, we need to re-earn our license to operate year on year. And modernizing actuarial practice to reflect, you know, social expectations and norms is key to that. So very much looking forward to today's discussion. Our presenter is online today. Joined by...
Okay, let me... I will start now, right?
One minute.
Let me introduce myself. Yeah, my name is Misha Santoso, and I will replace and represent my partner because they cannot join today because the mother funeral.
You have questions? You can smile
and I will... I'm a professional in a... reliability and validity analysis, especially on the quantitative analysis. Okay, I will start about the present, about the modernizing actuary practice. Okay, modernizing actuarial practice to address climate change and societal issues, a systematic literature review. Okay. This is my overview for today's presentation. The first is about the modernizing actuary practice to respond to global challenges. And the second is about the climate change as a multidimensional risk. The third is about the social issue as an increasingly important actuarial consideration. The fourth is about the institutional and regulatory process for the ESG inclusion. And the last is about the strategic role of literature review in identifying trend and the gaps. Okay, for the next first section is about the modernizing actuarial practice to respond to global challenges. The first one, we have modern actuarial practice. And we have two dimensions. The first is about the financial risk dimension, and the second is about the societal and climate risk dimension. The first one is a fundamental component of actuarial model must continue to be based on the financial assumption, probability, and historical data. And the second one is about the societal and climate risk dimension. This one incorporated with social inequality, climatic uncertainty, and also ESG consideration. And this element must combine to guarantee the result of accuracy and relevance. Okay. Next is about the climate change is a key driver for the actuarial transformation because the actuarial is increasingly required to model future risks involve the sea level rise, natural catastrophes, pollution effect, and disaster of agriculture. So therefore, the actuarial methods must be evolved to incorporate the stress testing, take into the consideration for the long term, also encourage the financial industry to implement the strategic climate risk management. Okay, about the societal issue. Expanding the actuarial responsibility. Because the actuarial work must now incorporate it by demographic change and also social justice considerations. So we have two issues. Yeah? The first one is aging population, demand for retirement and long-term care model. And the second is about the social movement, demand for inclusion and equality and fair treatment. So among the social hazard is like inequality in of income, disparity in race and gender, also the access to the cost healthcare. This one must be incomplete and raise socially biased outcomes. And we have to pay attention of this one. And next about the ESG and regularity drivers for shaping the future of actuarial work. Actuarial procedure is being more modernized by the external stakeholder through the following means. The first one is ESG integration mandates. The second is about the sustainable finance rule, and the last one is industry recommendations such as TCFD, IEE, and UNEP-FI. So to complete and lead, actuaries must help the firm to satisfy the social requirement and use quantitative and qualitative methods, also learn a new skill to make the long-term sustainability. And this slide is about discuss the challenges and the opportunity. The challenges is about the traditional training lack of ESG focus, gap in data and social environmental risk, and cultural resistance within the profession. And the opportunities, we have redefined the role of actuary in society, increase the relevance in global risk management, also the support for the long-term sustainability and social justice. Okay, this one, the second subtitle about the climate change as a multidimensional risk. Okay, the limit of historical data, we have two gaps. The first is about the historical data gap, and the second one is about the uncertainty gap. About the historical data gap, it involves the past climate patterns and also the frequency intensity event that changing and unpredictable. And the second one about the uncertainty gap, it involves the future scenario like complex feedback loop and also scenario analysis with the stress and trend extrapolation. Okay. And next is about the systematic nature of the climate change. We have two challenges. The first one is interconnected risk, and the second one is long-term horizon challenges. The first one, like a drought and the cross-border and the consequences like supply chain breakdown and migration. The second one is about the actuary instrument frequency favor short-term and medium-term and the effect of climate change, like a systematic complexity that must be reflected in the risk management. And the impact of the financial sector, we have two exposure, yeah? The first one is about the asset exposure, and the second one is about the liability exposure. The asset exposure itself, it will be devaluation of the carbon-heavy industry and climate-vulnerable investment at risk, such as real estate or agricultural. And the liability exposure, it will be involve the higher claims due to increased natural disaster and longer lifespan affecting the pension, like liabilities due to climate-driven health shift. And the modern response, it will be like we have methodological innovation and we have professional role expansion. In the methodological innovation, we will utilize the TCFD framework and climate scenario modeling, also combining the machine learning, ESG indicator, and qualitative data. For the professional role expansion, we will working along the economists, policy specialists, and environmental scientists. The actuaries serve a counselor on the climate risk. Okay, the third section is about the social issue as increasingly important actuarial consideration. The rise of social consideration in actuarial work, it will be 3 points. The first point is about the supposed to make decision, and the second is about the public stakeholder regulation, must be pay attention about the issue of discrimination, justice, and systemic effect. And the third one is about the social, ethical, equitability viewpoints must be incorporated with this recommendation. And about the involving role of actuaries in society. From the socially, it will be the technological goals and transparency equity. We have pay attention about the public interest, also increase the responsibility for the actuarial device long-term social effect. About the issue of discrimination and fairness in insurance pricing. Yeah, when the group pricing result in disadvantage or issued a remedy raise. So, for example, even based the evidence premium greater for the specific gender, ethnic, and impairment, this was issued to pay attention. So actuaries are required to evaluate the ethical for legal and justify for this such discrimination. For the legal consideration, we have two limb tests. The first is data limb, and the second is no data limb. For the data limb, discrimination must be based on the statistical data in a reasonable context. For the no data limb, if the data not available, so discrimination must be reasonable for the relevant factor and avoid the arbitrary exclusion. Okay, next is about the institutional and regulatory process for ESG inclusion. This shift is no longer optional because it will be mandated and globally incentive. So the key of the institutional driver, it will be International Actuarial Association and United Nations Principle for Sustainability Insurance and the Task Force on the Climate-Related Financial Disclosure. And actuaries must be responsible for making the ESG into the model reports to maintain the professional and legal relevance. Regulatory evolution is a new compliance for frontier. So the example include the EU Sustainable Finance Disclosure, Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, UK Prudential Regulatory Authority, and ECPS from EIS. So the implication will be the actuary must evolve to reprint it and implemented this rule in evaluation and solvency calculation. Institutional and regulatory process to ESG inclusion. Because the trend will be the ESG metric, it will be quantitable and auditable. So the actuaries must help to define, measure, manage, and ESG-related liabilities and risks. So the investor must demand the transparent ESG impact assessment. So what is the actuarial role? To lead the development of ESG aligned assumption and scenario and also translate the ESG risk into the financial implication. The global institution is a partnering for the actuarial profession to embed the ESG thinking. For example, UNFI and IAE, UECD and ESSB, and local actuary association. And this all collaboration empowers actuaries to build the credibility and shape the future of financial sustainability. Okay, the last is about the strategic role of literature review in identifying trends and gaps. Okay, the strategic role of the literature review in actuarial modernization, it will be 4 points. The first point is about the literature review synthesized global research on evolving actuarial practice. The second one is about the how actuarial science integrate the climate and societal risk beyond the traditional financial risk. And the third is about observe a fundamental tool to track emerging methodologies. And the last is about to enable actuary and research to align on current knowledge and future priorities. To make identifying trends in modern actuary practice, so the literature review revealed that the growing adoption of ESG and sustainability consideration, it will be increase the use of scenario analysis. Also, we have to look for the risk framework, and then expansion the actuarial roles to include the social justice, demographic changes, and climate adaptation. So it will be need highlight cross discipline approach to blend the science and environment social research. Okay, to uncover the gaps in the knowledge and practice, so we have critical gaps such as insufficient climate data integration, the lack of standardized framework for social risk assessment, and we have also limited research on the long-term uncertainty and ethical implications. So, the guiding to the research and professional development, the review must focus on the first one, developing the robust method for social and climate risk modeling. The second is enhancing the actuarial training for sustainability ethics. And the last is encourage the qualitative alongside the quantitative approach. So the support from policymaker and industry leader is very important for this one. Okay, thank you for your attention. If there are any questions, maybe I have 10 minutes. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for that presentation. I might kick things off. If you do have any questions, please, it's a small group, so you could steal the microphone or you can go via the app. But one thing that I was interested in is yesterday we talked about fairness and the fact that people have different views on what's considered fair. So, for example, you might think a house by the coast, that house has been there a long, long time. Do you charge them a premium for home insurance that is commensurate with that risk, or do you cross-subsidize that sort of risk? So fairness is very much, you know, open to interpretation. It varies by individuals. Given that, what is the role of the actuarial profession and the institute in terms of, you know, setting what is fair in your views or in your opinion?
Okay, what is the role of what? I'm sorry.
What is the role of the profession in sort of shining a spotlight on, you know, different outcomes that might be considered fair to different groups?
Okay, the roles of actuary in different groups, right?
Yes, yep.
Okay. So different group of actuaries and a different group of the stakeholder, it will be have different roles itself in the each field. So I think they have to struggle with their own field and their own policymaker so they can optimize their role to enhance the trend of the risk, disaster, and etc. So if we have our best and we do our best, so the implication for the risk itself, it will be minimized and we can implement our policymaker and our regulation that have, I think until now is also better, yeah, from the past. And also combined with the data statistical and analysis, I think we can get the better future and sustainability, sustainable in the future in the long term. Thank you.
Great. We have a question from the audience, which is how should actuaries work with regulators to encourage progress on ESG?
Okay, regulated off.
So the question was, how should actuaries work with regulators to encourage progress on ESG?
Of ESG, during the progress, I think they have to make their own requirement, because if they have their own requirement and also implement the rules with properly, and also still implement the standard, yeah, beyond the rules, so they can push to the limit, so the result will be better from the past trend of historical data, and we can use also the additional analysis for the risk mitigation, so we can optimize the result for this one. Thank you.
Thank you. And I might just ask the audience a question, which is, we've had a lot of discussion this morning on the opportunities of AI. You know, there was a plenary session devoted to that. I think one of the, you know, really important points for us to consider as actuaries are what are the risks, you know, to AI, and how can we, you know, educate sort of members to be conscious of those risks and minimize those risks. So I might ask anyone in the audience, have you come across these risks? Do you have any top tips for how to, you know, mitigate those sort of risks that AI brings?
Okay, for the AI risk, right?
Correct.
Okay. The AI, I think, bring big opportunities here for the efficiency, for the innovation, and better decision making across the actuarial and financial sector. So, however, it also introduces a number of critical risks that must be carefully considered and we have to manage. One major risk of the biased data is about the algorithm, because the AI system is also good as they are trained to be like outcome of the AI-driven decision that can enforce those inequalities. So I think if another key risk of the AI is lack of transparency, explainability, but many AI model can particularly deep learning system function like black box, it will be make difficult to the stakeholder for understand how the decision making made. So this can be problematic and regulated industry. So we have to learn from the real world example where AI did not according to the plan. Yeah. For example, in the UK, algorithm used to assign a grade of the COVID in pandemic, last pandemic 2020. So it can be widespread to the public. After that, the downgrade student, yeah, they have disadvantaged background. So the system is crap. So it's offer fairness, lack of transparency. So another case, we involve the US healthcare algorithm. In the black patient is discriminated from the white patient. So I think from this example highlighted strong governance, ethical oversight, and robust testing framework before we implement the AI, yeah, to ensure the fairness, accountability, and human oversight is very essential to unlocking the AI potential and minimize the harmful. Thank you.
I'm interested to hear from anyone in the audience, and I should say my background is general insurance. And one of the things that we have looked at is professional indemnity risk. And a good example of AI and some of the risks from that perspective is you might consider a lawyer. You're asking them for legal advice. They use an AI tool to pull, you know, relevant case notes and law. But that, you know, AI system hallucinates and gives you a sort of a poor result. And if you think about it, you know, a lot of occupations have the same sort of risk without appropriate checking, without that analysis and somewhat skepticism. That is a real risk. But I might just throw to anyone in the audience, have you come across any risks in your, you know, day-to-day role that you are able to share?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I do find that, for example, when I am working through like preparing a paper, for example, a research paper, and, you know, you go through and ask the GPT models and, you know, various questions, research questions, you need to go through and ask, you know, where did you find this, scrutinize the sources and go through and make sure it actually, you know, has a source for everything it's pulling out, because of the risk of these sort of hallucinations. So I think that's a big one. And then, going back to what the presenter was saying, that there are a lot of risks in terms of the, you know, the fairness, of these models. I think it is important, like you said, to have robust testing, things like model agnostic evaluation methods like Shapley values are really useful to sort of diagnose when there are, you know, unintended effects, make sure that you're not producing effects that discriminate by protected classes. And of course, there are the other sort of big risks are things like, you know, privacy issues. I did give a sort of brief talk yesterday. I don't know if anyone's here for that one, but one of the risks was that this one sort of simulates lots of individual sort of person level data using an AI based model. And one of the risks is that, you know, if you're training it on, you know, person level data, what's the risk that it just sort of spits out someone's exact personal history? And so there are, you know, certain packages that you can bring in to help, you know, deal with these kind of privacy issues that obfuscate the data while still preserving the overall, distributions in the data set. So yeah, there's a handful of risks that I've talked about here. Privacy, fairness, and just making sure you avoid the hallucinations.
I'm taking a little bit of a different sort of focus now, but APRA set their capital requirements and prudential sort of standards based on organizations being able to withstand a 1-in-200-year event. So you need to purchase insurance, you need to hold enough capital to withstand that event. You talked about, you know, changes in the interconnectedness of risks due to sort of climate change. To what extent has that been, you know, considered in your analysis when it comes to setting the capital that organizations need to hold, or is more work required?
Okay, about the APRA, right? Yes, the climate change, as we have to make the complicated estimation for 1-in-200 years, even within the APRA framework, the traditional, this type of event was calculated using the historical data and the statistical model based on the past frequency and severities of natural catastrophe. So, however, if we are talking about the AI and climate change of altering the pattern, intensity, and about the frequency of this event, it will be make the past data less reliable as a predictor in the future risk. So, for example, the extreme weather and the patient, such as floods, cyclones, heat waves, it will be occurring more frequently and greater intensity now. So it means the event now, it will be more increased, yeah, and more often. It will be have a greater impact in our lives. So these non-stationary climate data challenges, also the actuaries have to revise their risk model to incorporate the climate projection rather than relying the historical experience data only. So in response, the insurance must work closely to the climate scientists and use the advanced catastrophe modeling also to integrate the climate scenario analysis to adequacy planning and also reassure the strategy of the emerging risks, especially for the correlation between climate driven change, AI, greater uncertainty and volatility, and force the dynamic science-based approach for the estimating, preparing for the red catastrophic, even under the APRA standard, I think. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And I might just add to that, and I think reflecting on the LA wildfires recently, that has led to a little bit of a focus on some of the more minor perils, you know, bushfire perils. They historically haven't received as much attention as, say, earthquake, you know, cyclone, flood. And there's a bit of a sort of reassessment of that risk at the moment. I have one question, which again I'm going to throw to the audience as well. I've been in the industry now for close to 20 years, and I know you're sort of thinking I look a lot younger than that. How can that be right?
Thank you.
But one of the changes that I've seen, and particularly post Royal Commission, is the focus not just on financial reporting, but boards and senior management are looking at how they treat their customers. So, you know, for example, how much premium do they return to customers in the form of claim payments? How long does it take them to assess claims? You know, where are they disputing claims? And I'm interested in your view and anyone in the audience's views. Have you seen any similar changes in your industry? And if so, you know, would you mind sort of sharing them with this group?
Chinese? I'm a Chinese, but my Mandarin not so good. Okay, speak English, it's okay. Okay, so what's the last question?
So, excuse me? A question, yeah, again, for the audience as well. Have you seen any changes in your work that bring in some of these sort of issues, whether it's questions you're being asked from, you know, management, whether it's, you know, the way that you've been directed to do work, what you're reporting that considers the social aspect more than just, the, you know, just providing the financial results?
Yeah. Especially I have many clients also from my student and my client from Chinese, but sometimes they did not speak Chinese also, they speak in English. So about the language, yeah, Chinese and English, I think it's no matter what we talk, the most important point is we understand each other. And about the language, I think for the Chinese is good also because it will be international like English also. But English is still number one, I think, yeah, not the Chinese one, because to recombine the culture is not as simple as that, and we have to avoid the minimal of the risk. So we have still can make a mutual understanding between Chinese and between the English language. And about the report, I think still English, yeah, because Chinese is more complicated. Thank you.
Thank you. I might ask anyone in the audience have anything to add to that? Yeah, great.
See if my voice holds out for this. So my background is general insurance. I've worked at two of the big general insurance companies over the last seven or 8 years. I think, so that was before the Royal Commission, and then afterwards, given it wasn't a lot of years before the Royal Commission actually happened. But it's interesting to hear about stories, particularly from like the executives and stuff, because it's not just, you know, looking out for the customers, but also there's more pressure on employees of these companies where, you know, you go to the barbecue and your mate says, oh, your company made $200 million in profit over the last year or whatever the numbers are. But yet you've screwed over this poor person in Lismore, or their insurance premium has gone up by 3 times or something like that. So I think there is social precedent. I think it's from different sources and maybe people thought it was. You can't just be a nice executive in an insurance company and make heaps of money and not worry about where that money has come from, essentially. I think as well, even when I took up a grad job in a insurance company, which was whatever it was, 7 or 8 years ago. And I mean, I'd done actuarial studies as a uni degree. It wasn't an uncommon place to go. Some of my friends of my generation were saying, oh yeah, but you're probably screwing over people somewhere, which is why you're making money. Not that grads make very much money, but that's kind of the perception. And I think also the youth are probably seeing a bit more of that as well. The hard part of that is trying to, I guess, then respond to those people with, what they're seeing is claims and profit. And profit's not necessarily the opposite of claims, but it can be an outcome of how you manage claims. And it's also the reward for doing business and taking on that risk. Maybe there needs to be a discussion about the insurance industry and profits and how that then, trickles down to claims and doing that, because there's also an interesting thing at the moment going on in the insurance industry, or at least in the advertising. So if you watch TV, and I probably watch a bit too much free-to-air TV, but the ads at the moment are, you know, NRMA, we're a help company. Allianz just released one, which was, you know, a bird flying over and saving everyone or something like that. And Gruen on the ABC did an interesting piece on talking about that, because you've got these two extremes that people are seeing. They're seeing the advertising, which is saying, look, we're a great company, you want our products, and then you see, you know, you watch the 7:30 report and see all these horrible things. So I think from a company's point of view, there's definitely more focus on that, but yeah, it's really tricky to find the balance between giving them the information they need and telling them the true risk of their properties, but not scaring them or screwing them over in the process. So curious to see how it goes from here.
Thank you. And I must say, I've had similar experiences going to barbecues, and then people ask, what do you do? And I say, I work, you know, insurance. And you can see the, you know, the distrust, mistrust, you know, from that point on. I think it's a real challenge, you know, for the industry as well. I mean, the other thing is insurers need to hold a lot of capital. That capital comes from, you know, you and me. It comes from shareholders. It comes from super funds. And quite rightly so, there needs to be a return. Hold a lot of capital. You need to generate a lot of profit as a, you know, it's a big number, $1 billion in profit, say. That's quite hard from a PR perspective. We have a question from the audience, which is, can you please elaborate on your literature review process? For example, the keywords used
and the data used? And also, what do you think of the gaps in the existing literature?
Okay. For the gaps of the literature I have made, the point is for the actuary, yeah, because if we predict for the result, but in the practice, we cannot predict in the reality. So if the historical data, we have strong and significant data, so in the future, we can predict, maybe the probability not always high, but maybe 50% or 60%, we can still predictable. But in the real life, to be honest, the unpredictable event is still happening, yeah, until now. So about the statistical data in the historical data I have been analyzed, we can still minimize the risk with that one, with that the data that's valid and reliable. Of course, we have to make some analysis and some visual graphic to make sure about that one. But I still believe it still can be to minimize the risk in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Any final questions from the audience? No, thank you very much for a very sort of thought-provoking presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.